As we begin our Purim study tonight, let me ask first, why is Purim not in Leviticus chapter 23?
Doesn't tell about either the first or second coming.
Exactly. In Leviticus chapter 23, there are seven of the feasts and festivals that teach about the first and second coming of the Lord. This is not one. So this is a very important celebration, a very important holiday, but it doesn't tell us about the timing of Messiah's coming. So if you turn on YouTube right now, you'll see 100 different videos of the rapture is coming at Purim. No, it isn't. The rapture will come at Rosh Hashanah. But Purim, what does the word Purim mean even? It means lots, because they cast lots to see a particular date that we're going to learn today. But there is a custom during Purim that whenever I say the name Haman, you guys make noise. Why would you do that?
Blot out his name.
Yeah, let's go look at the Bible and see. Go to Genesis chapter 14. Genesis chapter 14. What a good place for you to have been studying this morning already. Genesis 14 verse 7 is the first mention of the Amalekites. Genesis 14 verse 7.
Can we boo them too?
Yes, you can boo them too. That's okay. Then they turned back and came to En-Mishpat, that is Kadesh, and attacked all the country of the Amalekites, and also the Amorites who dwelt in Hazazon Tamar. So that begins to let us know that the Amalekites must not be the nicest people. Go up to Genesis chapter 36, and let's find out who Amalek is. Genesis chapter 36, he's a backstabber. Well, let's find out why Mike says that. Genesis 36, verse 12. Genesis 36, verse 12. Now Timna was the concubine of Eliphaz, Esau's son, and she bore Amalek to Eliphaz. In other words, Amalek is Esau's grandson. Who was Esau the brother of? Jacob. Remember when Jacob stole Esau's birthright? No, he did not. The scripture says he bought it because Esau what? Despised it. Esau didn't want it, he despised it, so his brother bought it. And ever since then, Esau's descendants have been saying, we were wronged. If we go to Exodus chapter 17, we will find there has been warfare between the Amalekites and the Israelites down through history. And it's not over yet. Many of Amalek's descendants and Esau's descendants today we call Palestinians, which is a misnomer, because they are not Palestinian. Exodus chapter 17, verses 8 through 16. We'll find out why the Lord commands that we blot out the remembrance of Amalek. Exodus 17, beginning of verse 8. Now Amalek came and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said to Joshua, choose us some men and go out, fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. So Joshua did as Moses said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And so it was, when Moses held up his hand, that Israel prevailed. When he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands became very heavy. So they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on one side and the other on the other side, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. So Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, write this for a memorial in the book. What book? Exodus. And recounted in the hearing of Joshua that I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. Whose promise is that? The Lord's going to blot them out. And Moses built an altar and called his name, the Lord is my banner, Adonai Nisi. For he said, because the Lord has sworn, The Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation, which means it's not over yet. Amalek will be an important participant in these end time wars. Then go to Deuteronomy 25. Deuteronomy 25. Deuteronomy 25, verses 17 to 19. This is going to explain a little more why the Lord has such an unfavorable attitude toward Amalek. Deuteronomy 25, verses 17 to 19 says, "Remember what Amalek did to you on the way as you were coming out of Egypt. I met you on the way and attacked your rear ranks, all the stragglers at your rear." Who's at the rear of the company? Is it the mighty soldiers? No, it's the sick, the old, the infirm, the children that are too young. Amalek's a coward. He doesn't fight Israel head on. It's through terror tactics. It says, "When you are tired and weary, and he did not fear God. Therefore it shall be, when the Lord your God has given you rest for your enemies all around, in the land which the Lord your God is giving you to possess as an inheritance, that you will blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. You shall not forget." So the Lord's command is blot out the remembrance of Amalek. What does that have to do with Purim? I'm glad you asked. Go to 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel chapter 15. There are some key players in the book of Esther, which describes the creation of Purim. One is Haman. And the other is Mordecai. Yay. And in 1 Samuel chapter 15, we find out why these two characters are going to be in opposition to each other. 1 Samuel chapter 15, verses 1 through 9. Samuel was the prophet. He was also the last judge of Israel. That is, the last of the rulers before the kings. Are you guys having lots of fun? Okay. Samuel also said to Saul, "The Lord sent me to anoint you king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore, heed the voice of the words of the Lord. Thus says the Lord of hosts." Ooh, what kind of a prophecy? There's an end times element in this. "I will punish Amalek for what he did to Israel, how he ambushed him on the way when he came up from Egypt. Now go and attack Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have and do not spare them. But kill both man and woman, infant and nursing, child, oxen, sheep, camel, and donkey." So Saul gathered the people together and numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 foot soldiers and 10,000 men of Judah. And Saul came to a city of Amalek and lay in wait in the valley. Then Saul said to the Kenites, "Go, depart, get down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them. For you showed kindness to all the children of Israel when they came up out of Egypt." So God never brings judgment on the righteous with the wicked, never. So the Kenites departed from among the Amalekites. And Saul attacked the Amalekites from Havilah all the way to Shur, which is east of Egypt. He also took Agag, king of the Amalekites, alive. What did God say?
Kill them all.
And utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep, the oxen, the fatlings, the lambs, and all that was good, and were unwilling to utterly destroy them. But everything despised and worthless, that they utterly destroyed. So God said, destroy them all. And the people said, well, we'll destroy what we don't want, and we'll keep the rest. So, in the book of Esther, Haman is a descendant of King Agag, the Amalekite. And Mordecai is a descendant of King Saul. If King Saul had obeyed the command of the Lord, the events of the book of Esther would not have taken place. So let's read the book of Esther. Let's read what's called the Megillah. How many of his children watched a TV show called Megillah Gorilla?
I did.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You can tell the Jewish authorship of the cartoon. The Megillah means the whole scroll. So turn to the book of Esther. But at least now we know whenever I say Haman, why you're going to make noise. Verse 1, now it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus. This was the Ahasuerus who reigned over 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia. The reason they have to put the parenthetical is Ahasuerus is a title, not a name. It means majesty. It's like Caesar or Kaiser or Tsar. The way the kings of Babylon and Medo-Persia went were thus. Nebuchadnezzar overthrew Judah as king of Babylon. His son Evil-Merodach had his son Belshazzar. And then he was overthrown by Cyrus and Darius of the Medes and the Persians. Darius had a son Xerxes or Ahasuerus. That's this guy in Esther chapter 1 verse 1. So he is the son of Darius, who is the co-regent with Cyrus. And then Xerxes or Ahasuerus will eventually have a son, Artaxerxes, otherwise known as Darius the Persian, that we've been studying about on Saturday mornings. Back to Esther chapter 1, verse 2. In those days, when King Ahasuerus sat on the throne of his kingdom, which was in Shushan the citadel, that in the third year of his reign he made a feast for all his officials and servants, the powers of Persia and Media, the nobles and the princes of the provinces being before him. Let me tell you why. Cyrus, his father, had told the children of Israel they could go back home and rebuild the temple. But he, King Ahasuerus, had stopped the return and the rebuilding. Therefore, he believed that he had beaten the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Because God had said, after 70 years, they'll go home. And Ahasuerus can't count. And he thinks he's defeated God. Verse 4. When he showed the riches of his glorious kingdom and the splendor of his excellent majesty for many days, 180 days in all, which means they partied for 6 uninterrupted months. Wine flowing. Quite a time. And of course, what did he do when he finished his 6-month-long party? Verse 5. And when these days were completed, the king made a feast lasting 7 days for all the people who were present in Shushan the citadel, from great to small, in the court of the garden of the king's palace. So for the 6-month party, only the rich and famous were allowed to attend. So when they finished that, he had a week-long party that everyone, from the oldest to the youngest, the richest to the poorest, was able to come and celebrate. Verse 6, there were white and blue linen curtains fastened with cords of fine linen and purple on silver rods and marble pillars. And on the couches, they were of gold and silver on a mosaic pattern of alabaster, turquoise, and white and black marble. This is just bragging about how rich he is. Verse 7, they served drinks in golden vessels, each vessel being different from the other. Everyone in Shushan the citadel is at the party, and everyone gets a unique golden goblet to use. Wow. With royal wine in abundance, according to the generosity of the king. In accordance with the law, the drinking was not compulsory. Yeah, but how many people did that stop, I wonder? For so the king had ordered all the officers of his household that they should do according to each man's pleasure. Queen Vashti also made a feast for the women in the royal palace, which belonged to King Ahasuerus. On the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, in other words, what? He drunk. He commanded Mahuman, Biztha, Harbona, Bigtha, Abakta, Zethar, and Carcass. 7 eunuchs who served in the presence of King Ahasuerus to bring Queen Vashti before the king, wearing her royal crown. The Jewish sages say, and that's all, just the royal crown. They were not modest people back then. In order to show her beauty to the people and the officials, for she was beautiful to behold. But Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's command brought by his eunuchs. Again, the sages say it wasn't because of modesty, but that God had stricken her with leprosy, and that she didn't want the people to see. Therefore, the king was furious, and his anger burned within him. I mean, what's more embarrassing to a drunk king showing off all his earthly treasures before the people than his wife refuses to come, right? Verse 13, and the king said to the wise men who understood the times, for this was the king's manner toward all who knew law and justice. Those closest to him being Karshena, Shethar, Admatha, Tarshish, Meres, Marcena, and Memucan, the seven princes of Persia and Media. The word prince does not mean the son of a king. Please understand, it just means a royal leader of some kind, who had access to the king's presence and who ranked highest in the kingdom. What shall we do to Queen Vashti according to law? Because she did not obey the command of King Ahasuerus brought to her by the eunuchs. And Memucan answered before the king and the princes, Queen Vashti has not only wronged the king, but also all the princes and all the people who are in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus. For the queen's behavior will become known to all women, so that they will despise their husbands in their eyes when they report, King Ahasuerus commanded Queen Vashti be brought in before him, but she did not come. This very day, the noble ladies of Persia and Media will say to all the king's officials that they have heard of the behavior of the queen. Thus there will be excessive contempt and wrath. If it pleases the king, let a royal decree to go out from him. Let it be recorded in the laws of the Persians and the Medes so that it will not be altered. That's an important point not to miss. If a sealed document issued under the authority of the king of Persia went out, it could not be changed even by the king himself. It's a picture of the fact that when God issues a commandment out of his mouth, he will never ever change it. There are a lot of pictures and types in here that if we ever study the book of Esther, we'll have to look at. So it will not be altered. That Vashti shall come no more before King Ahasuerus, and let the king give a royal position to another who is better than she. When the king's decree, which he will make, is proclaimed throughout all his empire, for it's great, all wives will honor their husbands, both great and small. And the reply pleased the king and the princes. And the king did according to the word of Memucan. Then he sent letters to all the king's provinces, to each province in its own script. To what? To each province in its own script. Who does he rule over? The entire world. So there's 127 different provinces with 127 different languages. So to every people in their own language, that each man should be master in his own house and speak in the language of his own people. Chapter 2. 3 to 4 years have passed. Chapter 2, verse 1. After these things, when the wrath of King Ahasuerus subsided, it took him 3 to 4 years to get over it. What an ego! He remembered Vashti, what she had done, and what had been decreed against her. Then the king's servants who attended him said, let beautiful young virgins be sought for the king, and let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather all the beautiful young virgins to Shushan the citadel into the women's quarters, under the custody of Haggai, the king's eunuch, custodian of the women, and let beauty preparations be given to them. Then let the young woman who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti. This thing pleased the king, and he did so. In Shushan the citadel, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish. Whose son was the son of Kish? Saul, right. So Mordecai is the direct descendant of King Saul, a Benjamite. What's a Benjamite? Something from the tribe of Benjamin. What do we know in Israel that's in the tribal lands of Benjamin? Jerusalem. Verse 6 says, Kish had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captives who had been captured with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. So this Kish is named after the Kish who was the father of King Saul. Names run in families back then, as they tend to today. And Mordecai had brought up Hadassah. What does Hadassah mean? Myrtle. We read a lot about myrtle in the Bible. Myrtle's a picture of the believer. But her name is Hadassah. That is Esther. What does he mean, that is Esther? That's her name in the captivity. That's right. That's the name in Persia. His uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother. In other words, she's a what? She's an orphan. The young woman was lovely and beautiful. When her father and mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter, meaning he adopted her. So it was when the king's command and decree were heard, and when many young women were gathered at Shushan the city. That word gathered means they weren't necessarily volunteers. Okay? Under the custody of Haggai, that Esther also was taken. It's very clear she is not a volunteer. To the king's palace, into the care of Haggai, the custodian of the women. It's against her will. Now the young woman pleased him, and she obtained his favor. So he readily gave beauty preparations to her besides her allowance. Ooh, he slips her extra prettying things. Then 7 choice maidservants were provided for her from the king's palace, and he moved her and her maidservants to the best place in the house of the women. Verse 10 is important. Esther had not revealed her people or family, for Mordecai had charged her not to reveal. So they don't know in the palace that she is a Jewess. Verse 11. And every day Mordecai paced in front of the court of the women's quarters to learn of Esther's welfare and what has happened to her. Why does he do this?
Smitten.
What's that?
He's smitten.
He's smitten?
No, he loves
this
her.
This is his daughter. Adopted daughter.
Oh, Mordecai, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I thought we were in Alabama still.
No. No, we are not. So why does he do this? He cares for her. He's concerned about her welfare. She was taken, and he wants to know what's going to happen to my adopted daughter. Verse 12. Each young woman's turn came to go into King Ahasuerus after she had completed 12 months' preparation. What does this say about the beauty of the women in Persia that it took 12 months to pretty one up enough to show her to the king? I don't know. According to the regulations for the women, for thus were the days of their preparation apportioned. 6 months with oil of myrrh. What's oil of myrrh? Perfume. And 6 months with other perfumes and preparations for beautifying women. In other words, .. We don't need to know. Pretty stuff. Verse 13, thus prepared, each young woman went to the king, and she was given whatever she desired to take with her from the women's quarters to the king's palace. In the evening she went, and in the morning she returned to the second house of the women, to the custody of Shaashgaz, the king's eunuch who kept the concubines. She would not go into the king again unless the king delighted in her and called her by name. So this may be the only time she ever goes into the king's presence. Verse 15. Now when the turn came for Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his daughter, to go into the king, she requested nothing but what Haggai, the king's eunuch, the custodian of the women, advised. And Esther obtained favor in the sight of all who saw her. So Esther was taken to King Ahasuerus into his royal palace, in the 10th month, which is in the month of Tevet, in the 7th year of his reign, which means 4 years have now passed since we opened the book. Verse 17, the king loved Esther more than all the other women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins. So he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Does he know her origins? He does not. Then the king made a great feast. Wow, after a 6-month feast followed by a week-long feast, he made a great feast and called it the Feast of Esther for all his officials and servants, and he proclaimed a holiday in the provinces and gave gifts according to the generosity of a king. Verse 19, when virgins were gathered together a second time, Mordecai sat within the king's gate. What's that mean? He sat within the king's gate. He's a higher level official now, like a judge who does business in the gates of the city. Now, Esther had not revealed her family and her people, just as Mordecai had charged her. For Esther obeyed the command of Mordecai as when she was brought up by him. In those days, while Mordecai sat within the king's gate, two of the king's eunuchs, Bigthan and Teresh, doorkeepers, became furious and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. Meaning what? They were going to kill him. They were going to assassinate the king. So the matter became known to Mordecai, who told Queen Esther. And Esther informed the king in Mordecai's name. How did the matter become known to Mordecai, do you think? They knew that he was a Jew, so they figured he didn't understand the Persian language. Fatal mistake. Yeah. And when an inquiry was made into the matter, it was confirmed. And both were hanged on a gallows. Stop. Don't think the Wild West. The big wooden platform with the rope hanging from it where you hang them by the neck until dead, that's not the way it was done back then. A gallows is a long stake on which somebody gets impaled. Just like in the New Testament, there are people who criticize the New Testament as unreliable because Judas Iscariot in one place hanged himself, and in another place he fell down on a stake and was impaled. Yeah. In Bible terms, that was the same thing. It's just our Western mindset today. So Esther informs in Mordecai's name, meaning Mordecai, who sits in a king's gate, overheard this, and he's the one who wants to save the king's life. So it was confirmed, and both were hanged on a gallows, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king, meaning it was written in his presence, so he knew it was being written. Chapter 3. After these things, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite. See, the Bible tells us, no uncertain terms, he's a descendant of Agag. And advanced him and set his seat above all the princes who were with him. Meaning what? He becomes the number two man in Persia. And all the king's servants who were within the king's gate bowed and paid homage to Haman. For so the king had commanded concerning him, but Mordecai would not bow or pay homage. There's a little debate over why he wouldn't do it, but the favored answer is because he knows that Haman is a descendant of Agag the Amalekite, and that his ancestor, King Saul, was supposed to have obliterated them all and did not. So since God said he was going to make war with them and blot out their very remembrance, he doesn't want to honor the man. Verse 3. Then the king's servants who were within the king's gate said to Mordecai. Why do you transgress the king's command? Now it happened, when they spoke to him daily and he would not listen to them, that they told it to Haman. To see whether Mordecai's words would stand, for Mordecai had told them that he was a Jew. In other words, that's his explanation for why he's not going to bow down to this Haman. Very good. Gotcha. Okay. Verse 5, when Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow or pay him homage, Haman was filled with wrath. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone, and he is not sufficient in his mind to just kill Mordecai. He wants to kill every one of the Jewish people, just as they were supposed to have done to the Amalekites. It says, for they told him of the people of Mordecai instead. Haman sought to destroy all the Jews who were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, the people of Mordecai. It's now 8 years since the book opened, 4 years since Esther was crowned. Verse 7, in the first month, which is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Ahasuerus, they cast lots, It says here Pur, that's the Persian word for a lot. That is the lot. Before Haman, to determine the day and the month until it fell on the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. Can you imagine how Haman must be pulling his hair out? It's the first month of the year, and he can't destroy the Jewish people until the 12th month of the year. Arg! Verse 8. Then Haman said to King Ahasuerus, there is a certain people scattered and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from all other peoples. So what are their laws? The Torah, that's right. And they do not keep the king's laws. Therefore, it's not fitting for the king to let them remain. If it pleases the king, let a decree be written that they be destroyed. And I will pay 10,000 talents of silver. That's 375 tons. Into the hands of those who do the work to bring it into the king's treasuries. So the king took his signet ring from his hand and gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. Why does the king give the signet ring to Haman? For 375 tons of silver. And the king said to Haman, the money and the people are given to you to do with as seems good to you. Verse 12, then the king's scribes were called on the 13th day of the first month. Please make a note. That's Nisan 13. Nisan 13. Oh, we're getting really close to Passover, aren't we? And a decree was written according to all that Haman commanded to the king's satraps, to the governors who were over each province, to the officials of all people, to every province according to its script, and to every people in their language, for the name of King Ahasuerus, in the name of King Ahasuerus, it was written and sealed with the king's signet ring. Once it's sealed, what does that mean? Cannot be changed, not even by the king himself. Oh, this is bad, bad, bad. Verse 13, the letters were sent by couriers into all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all the Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day. On the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. When is the month of Adar? Anybody know? We're in the month of Adar. Yeah, right now. And to plunder their possessions. That's where he intends to get all the silver. A copy of the document was to be issued as law in every province, being published for all people, that they should be ready for that day. The couriers went out, hastened by the king's command, and the decree was proclaimed in Shushan the citadel. So the king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Shushan was perplexed. Why was the city of Shushan perplexed? The Jews hadn't been any problem to anybody. They don't understand. Chapter 4. When Mordecai learned all that had happened, he tore his clothes. What's that mean? Mourning. And put on sackcloth, which indicates repentance, and ashes, which is bitter remorse. And went into the midst of the city, cried out with a loud and bitter cry. He went as far as the front of the king's gate, for no one might enter the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. What if they did? What would happen? Off with their head, yep. And in every province where the king's command and decree arrived, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and ashes. So Esther's maids and eunuchs came and told her, and the queen was deeply distressed. What did they tell her? No, that Mordecai is laying in ashes and dust with torn clothing. She didn't get a copy of the decree. She doesn't know about it yet. Says, then she sent garments to clothe Mordecai and take his sackcloth away from him, but he would not accept them. So she wants to replace those with glad clothes, happy clothes, nice clothes. and he won't accept them. Verse 5, then Esther called Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs, whom he had appointed to attend her, and she gave him a command concerning Mordecai to learn what and why this was. See, she doesn't know why. Why won't he accept happy clothes? So Hathach went out to Mordecai in the city square that was in front of the king's gate. And Mordecai told him all that had happened to him and the sum of money that Haman had promised to pay into the king's treasuries to destroy the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the written decree for their destruction, which was given at Shushan, that he might show it to Esther and explain it to her. That almost sounds like, in little small words, this is bad. And that he might command her to go into the king to make supplication to him. What's it mean, supplication?
Begging.
And plead before him for her people. So Hathach returned and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Then Esther spoke to Hathach and gave him a command for Mordecai. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that any man or woman who goes into the inner court to the king who has not been called, he has but one law, put all to death, except the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter, that the king holds out, that he may live. Yet I myself have not been called to go into the king these 30 days. So they told Mordecai Esther's words. And Mordecai told them to answer Esther, do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. In other words, our fate is your fate. Verse 14, for if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. What do you call that? Faith. Why would he have this kind of faith? What did God promise? Were the children of Israel to be wiped out, never to be heard from again? No. So Mordecai is a man of faith. He knows that God's word will be done. It says, but you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Meaning, this may have been God's plan from the foundations of the world. Haman is surely acting as an agent of Hasatan, Satan, the devil, the evil one from of old, to try and frustrate the word of God and make it fail. He will not succeed. Verse 15, then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai,
go, gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will fast likewise. And so I will go to the king, which is against the law. And if I perish, I perish.
Why did they tell us on verse 12 of chapter 3 that it was the 13th day of Nisan?
Passover.
Because there's something important in the dates. How long are they going to fast?
3 days.
Takes us to the 14th, to the 15th, to the 16th. Verse 17, so Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther commanded him. Chapter 5, now it happened on the third day, that's the 16th of Nisan, that Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace across from the king's house, while the king sat on his royal throne in the royal house, facing the entrance of the house. So it was, when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court, that she found favor in his sight, and the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. What if he hadn't? They'd have killed her. But then it would have been a short story. So let's read on. Then Esther went near and touched the top of the scepter. And the king said to her, what do you wish, Queen Esther? And what is your request? It shall be given to you up to half the kingdom. Wait a minute, that's half the world. That's not something small. He really likes her. So Esther answered,
if it pleases the king, let the king and Haman come today to the banquet that I have prepared for him."
Then the king said, "Bring Haman quickly, that he may do as Esther has said." So the king and Haman went to the banquet that Esther had prepared. At the banquet of wine, the king said to Esther, "What is your petition? It shall be granted you. What is your request? Up to half the kingdom it shall be done." Then Esther answered and said,
"My petition and request is this. If I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, then let the king and Haman come to the banquet which I will prepare for them, and tomorrow I will do as the king has said."
What does that mean? She'll tell him what she wants tomorrow. So Haman went out that day joyful and with a glad heart. Why? Because only he and the king have been invited to this wonderful banquet. It says, "But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, and that he did not stand or tremble before him, he was filled with indignation against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home. And he sent and called for his friends and his wife Zeresh. Then Haman told them of his great riches," talk about pride, "the multitude of his children, everything in which the king had promoted him, and how he had advanced him above the officials and servants of the kings. Moreover, Haman said, "Besides, Queen Esther invited no one but me to come in with the king to the banquet that she prepared. And tomorrow I'm again invited by her, along with the king. Yet all this avails me nothing. So long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate." Then his wife Zeresh and all his friends, put friends in quotes, said to him, "Let the gallows be made 50 cubits high." That's 75 feet. Talk about arrogance. "And in the morning, suggest to the king that Mordecai be hanged on it. Then go merrily with the king to the banquet." And the thing pleased Haman. So he had the gallows made. Again, it's a pole 75 feet tall. How do you get the man on top of the 75-foot pole? The answer is you impale him first, and then you put the pole up. Yeah, you don't have a 75-foot ladder. No. That was a trick question.
I was going to go along with it.
Chapter 6, that night. A time hack, that night. So it's the night of what? The 16th. The king could not sleep. What a coincidence. This very night, the king can't sleep. So one was commanded to bring the book of the records of the chronicles, and they were read before the king. They must have been fascinating for the king to say, "Oh, this will put me to sleep." Verse 2, "When it was found written that Mordecai had told the Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs, the doorkeepers who had sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus, then the king said, 'What honor or dignity has been bestowed on Mordecai for this?' And the king's servants who attended him said, 'Nothing's been done for him.'" What? Talk about a terrible embarrassment. For no honor or prize or gift to have been given to Mordecai is to say that the king's life was worthless. So the king is so embarrassed. Verse 4, "So the king said, 'Who is in the court?' Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace to suggest that the king hang Mordecai in the gallows he had prepared for him. The king's servant said to him, 'Haman is there, standing in the court.' And the king said, 'Let him come in.' So Haman came in, and the king asked for him, and he asked him, 'What shall be done for the man whom the king delights to honor?' Now Haman thought in his heart, 'Whom would the king delight to honor more than me?' And Haman answered the king, for the man whom the king delights to honor. Let the royal robe be brought, which the king has worn, and the horse on which the king has ridden, which has a royal crest placed on its head. Then let his robe and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble of princes, that he may array the man whom the king delights to honor. Then parade him on horseback through the city square and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. Then the king said to Haman, hurry, take the robe and horse as you suggest, and do so for Mordecai the Jew, who sits within the king's gate. Leave nothing undone of all that you have spoken. Can you see the blood running out of his face? Oh boy, this was not what he had in mind. First of all, afterward, Mordecai, he's the good guy, went back to the king's gate. But Haman, yeah, he's the bad guy, hurried to his house, mourning and with his head covered. When Haman told his wife Zeresh and all his friends everything that happened to him, his wise men and his wife Zeresh said to him, if Mordecai before him had begun to follow us of Jewish descent, you will not prevail against him, but will surely fall before him. That's Genesis chapter 12, verses 2 to 3, right? Yep. Mm-hmm. While they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs came and hastened to bring Haman to the banquet which Esther had prepared. So now it's what day? The 17th. So the king and Haman went to dine with Queen Esther. And on the second day of the banquet of wine, so it's the 17th day of Nisan or Aviv. The king said to Esther, what is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Up to half the kingdom it shall be done. The Queen Esther answered and said, if I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we have been sold, my people and I, to be destroyed, to be killed, and be annihilated. Had we been but sold as male and female slaves, I would have held my tongue, although the enemy could never compensate for the king's loss. Wait a minute. Think for a moment. The king loves Queen Esther. And she's just said, somebody wants to kill me and my family. How does the king take the news? So King Ahasuerus answered and said to Queen Esther, who is he? And where is he who would dare presume in his heart to do such a thing? And Esther said, the adversary. Notice the adversary in Hebrew is Hasatan. Hasatan. They make it very clear. Hasatan means Satan. And the enemy is this wicked Haman. So Haman was terrified before the king and queen. He's terrified. Why? The king's really unhappy. He's really unhappy about this. But it gets worse, or better, depending on your point of view. Then the king arose in his wrath from the banquet of wine and went into the palace garden. But Haman stood before Queen Esther, pleading for his life. How did people eat in those days? Reclining. So he's pleading for his life, for he saw that evil was determined against him by the king. When the king returned from the palace garden to the place of the banquet of wine, Haman had fallen across the couch where Esther was. He just happens to slip and fall on top of the queen in the king's own chambers. Then the king said, will he also assault the queen while I'm in the house? As the word left the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. Now the question is, the words or the eunuchs? I think the eunuchs put a bag over his head. He's done. He's toast. He's out of here. Now Harbona, one of the king's eunuchs, said to the king, look, the gallows 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on the king's behalf, is standing at the house of Haman. Then the king said, hang him on it. So they hang Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then the king's wrath subsided. On what day is Haman hung on his own petard? The 17th day of Nisan is the same day that Noah's Ark sat down in Mount Ararat and Noah and his family were delivered from the flood, the judgment. It's the same day that Israel came out of Egypt, went through the Red Sea, that was on the 17th day. And it's the same day that Yeshua arose. All four of these great acts of deliverance take place on the 17th day of the first month. Chapter 8. On that day, King Ahasuerus gave Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told how she was related to her. So the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken from Haman. Well, clearly Haman doesn't need it anymore, right? And gave it to Mordecai. And Esther appointed Mordecai over the house of Haman. Now Esther spoke again to the king, fell down at his feet, and implored him with tears to counteract the evil of Haman, the Agagite, in the scheme which he had devised against the Jews. Can a king just say, okay, forget it, call it off? No, it's been sealed. It can't be changed even by the king. So he's in a predicament. He's in a quandary. His wife that he loves so much is soon to die. And the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther. So Esther arose and stood before the king and said, if it pleases the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and the thing seems right to the king, and I am pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, which he wrote to annihilate the Jews from all the king's provinces. For how can I endure to see the evil that will come to my people? Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my countrymen? So what does she ask? Find some way, husband, to undo this. His answer, verse 7. The king Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther and Mordecai the Jew, indeed, I have given Esther the house of Haman. They have hanged him on the gallows because he tried to lay his hands on the Jews. You yourselves write a decree concerning the Jews as you please in the king's name and seal it with the king's signet ring. Whatever is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's signet ring, no one can revoke. That's not entirely clear what he's trying to say. What he's trying to say is, you think of something to do because I'm out of options. I can't undo what's been sealed with my ring. Verse 9. So the king's scribes were called at that time in the third month, which is the month of Sivan, on the 23rd day. And it was written according to all that Mordecai commanded to the Jews, the satraps, the governors, and the princes of the provinces from India to Ethiopia, 127 provinces in all. To every province in its own script, to every people in their own language, and to the Jews in their own script and language. Was that Koine Greek, do you think? No. And he wrote it in the name of King Ahasuerus, sealed it with a king's signet ring, and sent letters by couriers on horseback, riding on royal horses bred from swift steeds. By these letters, the king permitted the Jews who are in every city to gather together and protect their lives. In other words, to defend themselves, to fight back, which otherwise they had no right to do. This is brilliant. Now it puts it in God's hands. To gather together and protect their lives, to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the forces of any people or province that would assault them, both little children and women, and to plunder their possessions. On one day, in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. A copy of the document was to be issued as a decree by in every province and published for all people, so that the Jews would be ready on that day to avenge themselves on their enemies. The couriers who rode on royal horses went out, hastened and pressed on by the king's command, and the decree was issued in Shushan the citadel. So Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel of blue and white, with a great crown of gold and a garment of fine linen and purple, and the city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad. The Jews had light and gladness, joy and honor. And in every province and city, wherever the king's command and decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a holiday. Then many of the people of the land became Jews because fear of the Jews fell upon them. Don't miss that last sentence. Read it again. Then many of the people of the land, i.e. Gentiles, became Jews because fear of the Jews fell upon them. They would rather be on the Lord's side than on Haman's side. Chapter 9. Now in the 12th month, that is the month of Adar, that's this month we're in right now, on the 13th day, the time came for the king's command, his decree to be executed. On the day that the enemies of the Jews had hoped to overpower them, the opposite occurred, and that the Jews themselves overpowered those who hated them. Were the Jews a majority? No. Were they a well-equipped army? No. Then how did they overpower the enemy? By God, that's right. The Jews gathered together in their cities throughout all the provinces of King Ahasuerus to lay hands on those who sought their harm. And no one could withstand them, because fear of them fell upon all people. And all the officials of the provinces, the satraps, the governors, and all those doing the king's work helped the Jews, because the fear of Mordecai fell upon them. For Mordecai was great in the king's palace, and his fame spread throughout all the provinces, for this man Mordecai became increasingly prominent. Thus the Jews defeated all their enemies with the stroke of the sword, with slaughter and destruction, and did what they pleased with those who hated them. Notice they're only defending their lives. If no enemies had come with the sword, there'd have been no killing. And in Shushan the citadel, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men. Also Parshandatha, Dalphon, Aspatha, Paratha, Adelia, Eridatha, Parmashta, Arasai, Aradai, and Vejazatha, the 10 sons of Haman, the son of Hamadatha, the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. They killed, but they did not lay hand on the plunder. In verse 7, underline the TH of Parshandatha. In verse 9, underline the SH in Parmashta. And the Z, that same sentence in Vejazatha. Those letters in the Hebrew are a different size. That's why I want you to underline them. Those reduced letters come out to the Jewish year 5707 or the year 1946, Common Era. And it was in 1946 of the Common Era that there were 11 Nazis to be hanged. But Goering took cyanide poison, leaving only 10 for the Nuremberg juries to hang. If you look at the Hebrew text, in these verses, the words have great separations in them. So we knew that there was great prophecy to be fulfilled. Verse 11. On that day, the number of those who were killed in Shushan the citadel was brought to the king. And the king said to Queen Esther, "The Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men in Shushan the citadel, and the 10 sons of Haman. What have they done in the rest of the king's provinces? Now what is your petition? It shall be granted to you. Or what is your further request? It shall be done." Then Esther said,
If it pleases the king, let it be granted to the Jews who are in Shushan to do again tomorrow, according to today's decree, and let Haman's 10 sons be hanged on the gallows.
Wait a minute. The 10 sons are already dead. So why tomorrow would we want to hang their dead bodies on a gallows? What does the scripture say about somebody who's been hung on a tree? Cursed is everyone who's hung in a tree. Yep. So the king commanded this to be done. Verse 14. The decree was issued in Shushan, and they hanged Haman's 10 sons. And the Jews who were in Shushan gathered together again on the 14th day of the month of Adar and killed 300 men at Shushan, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. That's the second time. Up in verse 10 it said, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. Why is that significant or important?
Because Saul was told not to take any plunder.
Saul was told not to take any plunder. That's good. I was thinking more of the fact that they're trying to defend their lives rather than profit from this.
Show their purpose.
Show their purpose.
Didn't
Abram,
when he went out and defeated a bunch of kings, said something about him not taking plunder also?
There was something like that back in Genesis.
I don't know if it has anything to do with that. But.
Yeah. Verse 16. The remainder of the Jews in the king's provinces gathered together and protected their lives and had rest from their enemies and killed 75,000 of their enemies, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. That's the third time it says it. So it was really important to God that we know that they were not motivated by greed. Their motivation was simply to remain alive. Verse 17. This was on the 13th day of the month of Adar, and on the 14th of the month they rested and made it a day of feasting and gladness. That's why we have such fun at Purim, because they tried to kill us. We survived. Thank God, let's eat. Right? Verse 19, therefore the Jews of the villages who dwelt in the unwalled towns celebrated the 14th day of the month of Adar with gladness and feasting as a holiday and for sending presents to one another. And Mordecai wrote these things and sent them to all the Jews near and far who were in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, which is all of them, to establish among them that they should celebrate yearly the 14th and 15th days of the month of Adar. That's Purim. As the days on which the Jews had rest from their enemies, as a month which was turned from sorrow to joy for them, and from mourning to a holiday. They should make them days of feasting and joy, of sending presents to one another and gifts to the poor. So the Jews accepted the custom which they had begun, as Mordecai had written to them, because Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, the enemy of all the Jews, had plotted against the Jews to annihilate them, and had cast Pur, that is the lot, to consume them and destroy them. When Esther came before the king, he commanded by letter that this wicked plot which Haman had devised against the Jews should return on his own head, and that he and his son should be hanged on the gallows. So they call these days Purim, after the name Pur. Therefore, because of all the words of this letter, what they had seen concerning this matter, what happened to them, the Jews established and imposed it upon themselves and their descendants and all who would join them. So that is any non-Jews who were willing to join together and celebrate with them. That's everybody. That without fail they should celebrate these 2 days every year according to the written instructions and according to the prescribed time. That these days should be remembered and kept throughout every generation, every family, every province, and every city. That these days of Purim should not fail to be observed among the Jews, and that the memory of them should not perish among their descendants. Then Queen Esther, the daughter of Abihail, with Mordecai the Jew, wrote with full authority to confirm this second letter about Purim. And Mordecai sent letters to all the Jews to the 127 provinces of the kingdom of Ahasuerus with words of peace and truth to confirm these days of Purim at their appointed time, as Mordecai the Jew and Queen Esther had prescribed for them, and as they had decreed for themselves and their descendants concerning matters of their fasting and lamenting. So the decree of Esther confirmed these matters of Purim, and it was written in the book. Chapter 10. And King Ahasuerus imposed tribute on the land and on the islands of the sea. Now all the acts of his power and his might, and the account of the greatness of Mordecai, to which the king advanced him, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Media and Persia? For Mordecai the Jew was second to King Ahasuerus, and was great among the Jews, and well received by the multitude of his brethren, seeking the good of his people, and speaking peace to all his countrymen. Having finished the book, what do we say? Chazak, chazak, v'nish, chazek. Be strong, and may we be strengthened. For how we strengthen as believers, but by studying the Word of God.